Diabetes Insights, Breakthroughs and Innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
Hello, you're watching EASD TV. Now, we've heard lots in the programme so far about different therapeutics, about different new technologies, but actually it's access that really counts, because if you can't get those new therapeutics and new technologies to people, then they will fail. And there is a particular group of people who are the subject of one of the sessions today that are doubly disadvantaged. So to talk about this, let me introduce you to Alice Rickford, who works in Lambeth, which is a very disadvantaged part of London, and to psychiatrist and psychosocial researcher Andrzej Kokoszka from Poland. What part of Poland?
Warsaw.
From Warsaw, who is going to talk about diabetes amongst people with mental health problems.
Yes.
So, Alice, first of all, what are the particular issues facing people in disadvantaged situations who either have diabetes or develop diabetes?
There are just so many problems on so many layers. There's difficulty with accessing continuity of care, which is absolutely crucial for managing chronic health conditions. There is difficulty accessing safe storage of medicines, repeat prescriptions. My particular presentation is going to focus on people who have difficulties with housing. There's a large problem with homelessness in all capital cities at the moment, not just London. So it's really focusing on some of the specific issues of unstable accommodation, my talk this afternoon.
And particularly in people who are abusing drugs, for instance, and who might also need injections of insulin, presumably supply of needles is also an issue.
Yes. I mean, it can be. Needles can be a problem, getting them, Sharps disposal. And I think there is a lot of stigma around intravenous drug use. And that level of extra complexity makes what is already a chronic condition that bit harder to manage.
So, Andre, tell me about the situation in people with severe mental health problems who also have diabetes.
I would say that it is probably well known that depression and diabetes are in bidirectional relations, and that depression, not only major depression as a disorder, but depressive symptoms and diabetes-related distress are important factor which has to be managed. And it seems to me that it is so much publications and knowledge among doctors and patients that I will focus in my presentation today on other topics which are not so much investigated. One of them is passive wish to be dead. I didn't find such publication, but in our study it is more correlated with problems with maintaining good level of glucose than suicidal thoughts. Suicidal thoughts usually last briefly. Of course, there is a high risk of committing suicide when someone suffers from suicidal thoughts, whereas wish not to be living, wish to be dead, is usually long time lasting. And it is related with lack of involvement in self-management and in something what I am trying to popularize, the notion of perception of self-control.
Yeah.
In the current UK position statement, there is emphasis that we shouldn't blame patients for not keeping perfect control. Diabetes is progressive disorder, progressive illness, and there is beyond possibility to fully control.
Yeah.
But I emphasize that some degree of self-influence on any disease course people can have even in terminal states. So it is better not expect to control the level of glucose, but to support people in increasing their self-influence on the disease course.
So we shouldn't ever forget the burden that diabetes places on people who are in other ways well and well supported, because the burden of constantly having to check glucose, all those things, I mean, imagine doing that when you're severely depressed. Alice, you were nodding away there.
So I think that's this sort of sense of self-control, is this something that I have control over, or is this something that happens to me? And some people don't have many choices in their life. They may not have had the choice about their education, about their housing, and feel that there's a sequence of events that happens to them. And that makes it so much more difficult for people to take control of their diabetes if you've got sort of low self-esteem and not many prospects in life. Then you don't have an expectation that your blood sugars will be particularly good, but you may also feel ashamed about it. And I think, and in a large sort of scientific conference such as this, when there's so much new technology, there's so much things that, which are so exciting, but there's still a large portion of patients who will never have access to, you know, this sort of excellent care.
Mm. And of course, we see a lot of things like apps on mobile phones that help reinforce people, you know, gold star, well done, you know, all those kind of things. But actually, if you're homeless, it's very difficult to keep a mobile phone because they get stolen. You need, you know, data to run your app.
Yep.
So those things are really not available, are they, for people who are homeless?
Yeah, the myth of technology is not a reality for a lot of people. I remember in the pandemic, I was doing a telephone consultation to a gentleman during lockdown. And he said, oh, well, this is the only... I spoke for a short time. And then he said, this is the only device in the house. My son needs it for his homeschooling. And, you know, that... When people are facing that, that just kind of puts it into a stark reality of what diabetes, living with diabetes, actually is.
So you've both looked at this problem very extensively. What are your suggestions for the future? I mean, I know this is not something that there's a silver bullet for, but what are the things that you think would help?
I would like to emphasize the second topic of my presentation, and it is a really thought-provoking finding. There are few psychological factors related with level of glycated hemoglobin, and we found that body image is highly correlated. So bad body image is related with bad management with diabetes.
How interesting.
So, and it is very interesting because it is only among who we found with... only among women, not men.
Oh.
But it means that criticism of doctors toward patients who are overweight is counterproductive. Instead, criticize them, it is better to discuss with them how we can help you to modify your lifestyle, how you help you to increase your self-influence on your life, on your diet. Not say, you came much more fat than recently.
Yeah.
And any criticism doesn't help.
Yeah.
So these are strategies that you use, are they, Alice?
Yes, I mean, I try and be as holistic as possible. I think an awareness of seeing the whole person is really important. As clinicians, we often look at numbers, we look at evidence, we, you know, want to sort of lower this and increase that. And I think unless you see the whole person and try and meet them where they're at, understanding. So I try and start with something, you know, so how are you feeling about your diabetes at the moment? As opposed to pointing at a result or, you know, I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but I think that I think it's just about seeing the bigger picture and that holistic approach of integrating, you know, psychosocial methods and social support with clinical acumen. So we have, you know, local solutions. Our clinicians are aware of food banks. We're aware of women refugees for, you know, domestic violence. So I think it's kind of that clinician being awareness and keyed into local networks that hopefully would provide some benefit. Increasingly, we're using social prescribers who have an amazing knowledge of housing benefit, of voluntary sector, of, you know, people who are lonely or depressed, you know, who lack that self-worth.
And buddy systems often help.
Yeah, definitely.
I would add that Socratic dialogue, not making pressure, is much better. It is much better to accompany the patient in looking for solutions of his, her problems made by him, her, in his own way, then propose solutions. And it is not so much time consuming. It is usually expectation that asking question lasts much longer than telling true. But it doesn't have to be big difference. We made some experiments. 5-7 minutes is enough for Socratic dialogue.
I love that, a Socratic dialogue in the consulting room. So and I don't want to reduce this to one silver bullet at all, but is there one thing that you would advise clinicians to do? Is there a question? I mean, you mentioned, how are you feeling about your diabetes? Is there something that you would try and start a conversation with that might be useful to the clinicians who are listening?
Well, I often say, which one of these things do you care about, or any of them? And we've got a fantastic leaflet in our clinic which has, you know, depression, HbA1c, impotence, you know, different things. Which is the thing that is bothering you at the moment? Which aspect of your life is on your mind? And then that's kind of your way in.
Yeah, that's because, a very useful thought.
Because once someone's addressed what it is that they care about, that opens the doorway to then... You know, we have our agenda as doctors, and it's kind of meeting halfway, I think.
Andre, how about for you?
I would say that a person with diabetes, it is abstractive statement. Usually we see people having several diseases, having problems in their families, problems with coping, with financial problems. So the solution is to see the person having, among other problems, diabetes. And it changed the attitude, and it changed the, I would say, nonverbal communication. It is not easy to make research on nonverbal communication, but the way of communication is for the patient much more important, developing trustful relation and being honest and revealing the doctor really what's going in his her life at all, and with management with diabetes specifically.
It's a really useful thought. Thank you to both of you. And if you've been listening to that, I think you'll be able to take away some really useful ideas for your own practice. You're watching ESD TV, and we'll be back very soon.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, go ahead and hit subscribe, and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, you can find plenty more information at easd.org.